Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go! Let's go! Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron Kiefer, and this is episode number 328. This is our final episode, and I just want to thank you guys for listening through the years. It's been a long time since the first episode was April of 2013, so quite an honor to have done this for that long and have some exciting things to kind of announce after this episode, so make sure you stick around for that. But really, really, truly appreciate each and every one of you listening through the years. Also want to thank our sponsors. Wouldn't have been possible without them as well. As I mentioned in every episode, I only partner with companies that I believe in, both the people and the product. And all the companies that I've had a part of Iron Game Talk Talk, I can say that 100% that I believe in both the people and the product. So if you're ever at a conference and you see them or they come through, please give them some time, let them know how much you appreciate them being a part of the show. When I started this show over 7 years ago, there was one person I absolutely wanted to get on this podcast, and that was Boyd Epley. And he doesn't need an introduction. He's the guy that we owe pretty much all of our careers to. And I wanted to make sure that I did this podcast justice before I even reached out to him to be on the show. But Coach, first foremost, thanks for all that you've done for me, the rest of the coaches that are listening to this, but also thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you, Ron.
Coach, I wanted, it'd be silly. I usually ask kind of your experience and kind of which experience best defines you. But for you, I think it's more fitting to ask kind of what in your career, what accomplishment? I mean, you've done so much different things that have, you've started the NSCA. You've obviously won national championships in Nebraska. You've done a little, you've helped shape a profession. Which one of those things are you most proud of?
Well, I think the fact that we have strength coaching, when I started, it was weightlifting, powerlifting, and bodybuilding. And I wasn't sure if any of those or parts of those would help athletes or not. So I decided that as a pole vaulter, and I was, training to run 40 yards, but carrying a pole in my hands. So I needed to get faster to be a good pole vaulter. And I thought, well, I'll look at these three, powerlifting, bodybuilding, and weightlifting to see what I can take from them to help my pole vaulting. Well, what I learned after doing all three of them for 3 years, I set a goal. If I'm going to give myself a three-year period to learn what I can. I learned that none of those three were the answer, but parts of those three each helped me. I got more explosive from the weightlifting, but there are a lot of people in our industry that think weightlifting is the total answer, and I do not agree with that. Then powerlifting, I learned right away, maybe that wasn't the answer because movements were so slow. And I wanted to be more explosive. So, but you still needed to get strong and exercise like the squat. You can't find a better exercise. So when you combine the squat with maybe the clean or hang clean or something explosive from weightlifting, now you got something. In bodybuilding, I had trouble finding anything that really would carry over there, except that I enjoyed that. So what I tried to do is say, all right, now what are we going to call this? When I take pieces from those three areas, what are we going to call it? Well, we started calling it strength training, and we added the word conditioning. So strength and conditioning really came from all three existing sports or that industry that existed. So I'm very proud that we have strength and conditioning, because at one time in this country, there were very few people that believed in lifting weights to help improve athletic performance. That's probably my biggest accomplishment, was to get that turned and get people headed in the right direction.
Yeah, we're thankful you did. You know, I want to unpack that a little bit because I think there's tons of things to take away from that. But before we do, I always like to ask, especially, you know, one of the defining questions of this podcast has always been to ask coaches what their biggest mistake and how they have learned from it. And the reason for that is because I think if you can help navigate and dodge some some potholes along the way, you might be able to get there a little bit quicker. What's one of the biggest mistakes that you've made and how you learn from
it? You know, nothing comes to my mind that I can think of that would be considered a big mistake. I've had a lot of adjustments in my life. I got hired by the Detroit Lions one time. Not very many people know that.
No, I didn't know that either.
And Tom Osborne asked me to stay at Nebraska. And that was a major decision that I had to make. But I don't know that that was a mistake. I don't know that I've had any major mistakes because I have a philosophy, the great ones adjust. And no matter what happens, if you can adjust to it, even in a small way, then I don't think you could consider those mistakes. You call them adjustments.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. It's a nice life maxim and just in and of itself. You know, you mentioned early on, you know, the way that the field looked when you first got into it, right? Or, you know, when you started it, I guess I should say. When I often talk about, you know, right now we have a lot of coaches that are coming out that are, you know, they get their degree, they get their certification, they, you know, they get a little bit of experience, and then they got their, you know, then both hands are up and saying, where's my job? You know, and you literally built a career, a job, a profession out of a time when the people thought it was bad to lift weights. Like they would laugh at you, you know? And so the ingenuity and kind of the entrepreneurship of that, you know, to me, it's right now, there's still so many, I mean, until there's a strength coach in every high school, there's an opportunity to create a job, you know, or all these other disciplines. I talked to somebody the other day about building or putting strength coaches on oil rigs because of the demands of that job. You know, talk a little bit about that, you know, that time and how you went about, you know, where that entrepreneurial spirit kind of came from. And what advice you have for this generation of strength coach to stop kind of sitting on their hands and create opportunities for themselves?
Well, unfortunately, the NC2A has made a rule that has really hampered our strength coaching for the sport of football particularly. And I think it came about because football coaches were hiring more than their 8 or 9 official assistant coaches. They Right. were hiring people than calling them strength coaches, and they were actually football coaches with the name strength coach. And so the NC2A made a rule that you could only have 5 football strength coaches. That was, in my opinion, a mistake, because what that did was it limited the growth from the bottom up. So if you were a student who wanted to be a graduate assistant, wanted to be a strength coach, learn how to do it, learn the profession, you could move up into one of the key positions as a strength coach. Now you've taken away that bottom and you just have the 5. It also destroyed growth for females to become strength coaches in the sport of football. It would be very rare to find one now because there's only 5 spots and the guys are going to kind of dominate the industry. And that's not right. When I was the head strength coach at Nebraska those 35 years, I had like 33 people involved at all different levels. Of course, I had my very top strength coaches, but I also had volunteers and GAs and interns and everything you could name, and they all had responsibilities. Well, that NC2A ruling really destroyed that. And to look back at it now, what did it really solve? Because as soon as the football coaches learned what that rule was, they start hiring what's called analysts. And now colleges across the country have, I don't know how many analysts, but Correct. There's no rule on how many analysts you can have that I know of. And there's one for every position at these major colleges. So it's ridiculous what, what came about. And the people that got hurt the most were strength coaches. Great. And the industry for strength coaching.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it could very easily could have just said, hey, look, that those positions have to have a CSCS or a CSCA.
Exactly.
CSCA, and that would have ended that, you know, for putting football coaches in the weight room. But
and actually, the NC2A did make a rule that you had to have a requirement, and they recommended CSCCA or CSCS, but they aren't even enforcing that rule.
Right, I know.
And so, you know, we're members of the NCAA or the NCAA, and I wish they could correct those two errors, because it certainly hasn't done much for the industry of strength and conditioning.
Agreed. What advice do you have for those young coaches that are, you know, that are coming out, that are credentialed, that have a little bit of experience, but they're just kind of waiting for that job to kind of come fall in their lap?
It's not a great opportunity right now. And I have trouble recommending the strength coaching to young people. I really do. It is not good. Unless you're willing to work for free to get some experience and then hope that you know somebody, it's still an industry where who you know, it's not right. And if a person at a major university has an opening, there might be 150 to 250 applicants for that one position.
700 for my last job.
700 applicants. Isn't that ridiculous? And so what happens then is when there's a lid on the industry like that, then those folks have to go sideways and find other opportunities, like in the fitness industry or personal training or nutrition or health club, whatever, to find employment to where they can get money. And we might be seeing the very best strength coaches go elsewhere because of this.
Couldn't agree with you more. You know, with that, I mean, I think that, you know, one of the questions I had is kind of the current state of the union. I think you answered that, but what do you think is, what do you think is on the horizon then? What do you think is, I mean, you've always been somebody that's been a great vision caster, you know, throughout your entire career. Where do strength coaches need to put their time and attention now? Their longevity.
Well, you know, I think what's happening is the industry has added research and added psychology, and nutrition has grown into its own, where at one point you could be a strength coach and a nutritionist. Now nutrition has its own certifications and own industry. So I think what's happening for the future is, and I'm not sure what they're going to be called, but someone that has experience enough to oversee all those divisions, all those areas, and be a director of the strength and conditioning, nutrition, sports psychology, whatever else, research. And so we're starting to see this pop up across the country now. And the NSCA announced not too long ago that they've created a certification for a position like that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably the future for the very best strength coaches. That if they're really, really, really talented and they can spread out a little bit instead of focusing just on strength and conditioning, they can oversee the research and oversee nutrition and so forth. Those directors then are the future. And I kind of started that at Nebraska by having a nutrition program and adding a psychologist. We've created a performance team in the 90s, but those divisions have broken off and they're their own departments now. Mm. But I think the future, they're all going to need to work together, because it doesn't do any good to have silos. You can't have them working independently. The athlete needs all of those benefits, all those services provided to them. And so we need directors that can pull that off.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of other countries, that position is called a high performance manager, right? And I think
whatever you want to call it, right? But that's what we need.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think in our, you know, I've said this, you know, a handful of times on the show where I think three things need to happen for the growth of strength and conditioning. One is putting a strength coach in every high school. I think that's still an untapped market, right? I think the second thing is creating degrees specifically in strength and conditioning so that you have a place for research coming up through students to learn from practitioners, and then a place for aging strength coaches to go to teach when they're done, you know, chasing whatever logo. And then I think it's the high performance manager, but in our model, it becomes an associate athletic director, right? Somebody that's got an associate title, that's running and coordinating those services. But I agree with you. I think that's the way of the future. You know, there's a lot of coaches right now that are struggling, you know, especially, I mean, there's, you know, we're technically on furlough right now. There's a lot of places that have lost positions. There's going to be very limited resources for the next probably decade, to kind of rebound from this. You know, you've always been somebody through the Husker Power Club or, you know, creating relationships with vendors or different, you know, creating relationships with technology companies. You know, what are some ways that you recommend coaches now fight and get and garner resources for their department in the next decade?
Well, I created the Husker Power Club because we needed money. We had student strength coaches that weren't making anything. And I asked our athletic director if I could send a letter out to the ticket holders, and he laughed. He said, "We don't share that list with anybody." I said, "Well, maybe no one's ever asked you." So I'm asking you. He said, "Well, yeah, well, maybe no one really has ever asked me." He laughed. He said, "We don't want you bothering our donors." And I said, "Well, how about if you give me the list and I take it to someone of your choosing and you cross off every name that you recognize as a major donor or someone that you don't want me to bother?" Because there are a lot of people on there that you don't know all those names, you know?
Right.
And then maybe I could just write to them and ask them for $40 is what I was asking for, I think it was. And he said, "Well, okay." So he gave me the list. I had the business manager cross off the names that were supposed to be crossed off, sent out one letter, and I got back $40,000 on one mailing.
Wow.
And then he realized, wow, the Nebraska fans evidently care about this thing. Maybe I'd be a little more receptive to the needs of our strength program. And so he completely changed and supported what I was trying to do and start providing money for it. And that booster club over time then donated over $2 million to the strength program directly. So that's pretty rare that we would, you know, anyone would have that kind of support for their strength training. So that was a good thing at Nebraska, but it's not that way across the country. The athletic directors don't like having, you know, those loose ends out there that they don't control. They'd like to have. And so now there's a lot more rules involved with fundraising, and I don't see that as potential for strength coaches to go do that. There are too many rules against it.
So what would be your advice then? Where do you garner? I mean, especially now, I mean, you're in an assistant AD role. You lead a team of how many strength coaches now?
Well, actually, Ron, I haven't announced this yet, but I'm going to retire June 30th of this year.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
It's just a few days away.
Yeah.
And, I've had a great career, and I'm 73 years old.
Yes, sir.
I'm about done with the University of Nebraska. And so we've already put in place people to replace me.
Right.
And everything's handled, and I'm just about done.
I understand. I understand that. And what a storied career, Coach. I mean, congratulations. And I think, you know, I've said it many times on this show, like to retire being a strength coach, you got to be special. You have to be special. Your wife has to be special. Yeah.
My wife is special, and she's a big part of my success, whatever success I've had, that's for sure.
100%. Well, that's well, congratulations on that. And man, it's hard to pivot from that, but I think I think that's a question I would ask. What, I mean, your advice. I mean, I know that you said earlier that you have trouble recommending the profession at this point and those types of things, but I also know, you know, you and I have had many, you know, talks, and I know that the impact that you know that you've made, still one of the greatest jobs in the world. It has a lot to go in terms of professions. But
well, I think this, the key to success for a strength coach is to work for a coach, whether it's a football coach or whatever coach you're involved with, that has potential and is successful. And your job really is tied to that head coach's success. Now, for me, I started with Bob Devaney, and he was a very successful coach, and he was followed by Tom Osborne, who won 255 games in 25 years. If Tom hadn't been a great coach, you know, sometimes schools hire coaches that aren't really right for that school. Well, then I wouldn't have been right. Or let's say if I had worked at another school where they were a complete passing team, all they did was pass. Well, my philosophy and what I had to offer, what I brought to the table, wouldn't have made much sense to those coaches. But Nebraska was a running team. They needed big, strong linemen. They needed road graders that could move people out of the way so the running backs could make their yards. And once in a while, they would throw the ball just to throw you off. But they were basically a running team.
Right.
And so I'm tied to the success that the head coach had. And I don't know that that's possible for everybody to attach themselves to a successful coach like that. But that's why I had am recognized as a strength coach that has had great success in strength training is because of the head coach I worked for.
Right. This retirement just being, you know, a handful of days away, you know, looking back, either both, you know, let's take the strength and conditioning profession out of it. What are some lessons or some things that you wish that you know now? You know, maybe, you know, I always talk on the show about money management or having multiple streams of income or having multi-talents, you know, all, you know, looking at other disciplines for inspiration for strength and conditioning. What are some things that you wish you could go back and tell yourself 15, 20 years ago?
Well, I had a lot of opportunities that maybe the current strength coaches don't have. For example, Nebraska only had one bar, an Olympic bar, one bar. They had a squat rack that was from a health club. It was a chrome upright. And what Rich Glover was a great middle guard, made 19 tackles in a national championship game at middle guard, but his squat rack was a joke. And so we did not have a great facility.
Right.
In fact, I went to the Student Rec Center to train as an athlete because they had more equipment, better equipment than what the university athletic department had.
Wow.
And so I had to get involved with equipment companies. And so I could probably list off 7 or 8 different companies that I worked with to develop equipment for our athletes. And that brought in extra income for me.
Sure.
Because those people were happy to pay you for your recommendations. I don't know that applies to every strength coach now, but there are some strength coaches that are advising companies like that, and they're making money on the side. Another area to make money on the side would be nutritional supplements or things that you believe in, but that's a little risky unless you really know what you're doing. But I'm pretty proud to have developed quite a few pieces of lifting equipment, the hip sled, the jammer.
Absolutely.
The half rack. I mean, think about how many half racks there are in this world.
Right.
That came out of Nebraska.
It's fantastic.
And one that we did not share is called the transformer. And that's where the bar and the safety levels move electrically.
That's the answer to me.
So those are rewarding to think back on, and you know, I help the companies to develop those, and I think they have helped athletes across the world. I even developed a line of equipment for children when my son was 6 years old called the Future Force. That wasn't a big hit. That was maybe, I think the delivery process on that was not right. You had to put it together yourself.
Right.
The companies that you're familiar with now, they'll come and deliver the equipment and wipe them off, and they're ready to go when you get your hands on them.
Right.
This other company, you had to put that equipment together, and it was that's not probably the best way to go. So I've had a lot of multiple tasks in my career that weren't all about the athlete.
You know, there's so much you can point to, and there's so much that we've talked about even in this episode, but, you know, now that it is coming to an end in terms of the day-to-day, what do you hope that your legacy, what do you hope people do say about you, you know, and what you accomplished in this profession?
Well, I'd like to be known as a good guy that listened and tried to help people. I know I've helped people. People write to me and thank me for something I did 30 years ago. I mean, it's kind of an ego boost when somebody does that. But you have to take time when someone is asking for something, and if you can help them, go ahead and help them. And that, so I feel pretty good about that. One time I'd lived 30 miles away from the stadium, and I was driving from my house toward the stadium. I was about halfway, and I saw this girl stranded on the side of the road going the other direction, some 16-year-old girl. So I stopped my car, and her engine had something, the radiator overheated or something. And so here she was, and it started to get dark at night. And I said, hey, man, I get to get to the stadium, you know. I said, this isn't right. I cannot leave this girl sit here by herself on a highway, probably about 15 miles out of town.
Right.
So I said, all right, I'm going to take you home. So I turned my car around, took her back to where she lived, and then I drove back to the stadium, and I never heard from her for about 40 years. One day, not too long ago, I'm in the training table having lunch, and this lady walks in, came over to me, and thanked me for doing that.
Wow.
So you just never know when it's going to come back to you, and you better hope that you did the right thing in the first place. You know what I'm saying?
100%.
That made me very proud that I wasn't trying to impress anyone. I just tried to do the right thing.
Right. And that's all we can hope for. Profession, right? As you know, because you know, there's going to be, especially now. I mean, I think, you know, you would probably say this more than I do, but I mean, the motivations of athletes haven't changed, but the world has changed around the athlete, right? And we're maybe not making the impact, you know, that we used to. You know, sometimes I feel like our athletes maybe don't graduate having recognized the role that we've played. But then many years later, kind of come back and they do, you know, that consistency and just being consistent, being there, being, you know, holding them extremely accountable to their goals, challenging them. Very few people do that in people's lives these days. And they may not appreciate it when they're 18 to 21 years old, but I think most people do eventually.
We strength coaches are a father figure for the athletes, and the athletes may not realize it or even think that way, but like you said, in the future, when they think back, they'll be appreciative of what the strength coach did for them.
Well, Coach, like I said at the very beginning, this has been this is a bucket list item for me, having you on the show, and what you've accomplished and what you've you know you've been somebody that's helped me every time I've reached out to you. You're somebody that has been an inspiration throughout my entire career. I mean, I think it's right over here. The Path to Athletic Power, you know, is still one of those books that really kind of opened my eyes to not just thinking about it as an X's and O's technician, but also somebody that thinks about the whole department and how you can, you know, get those resources and things. And think outside the box. I think that's the biggest thing. But, you know, you sharing that about you retiring, I mean, threw me for a loop because I think it's somebody that I see, I see you doing this forever. So thanks so much, Coach, for everything you've done for me, for everything you've done for the profession that you helped create. And, you know, we're honored that you've been a part of our lives in some small shape, you know, some way, shape or form, whether it's large or small, but thank you, Coach.
Thank you, Ron.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.